So in 1878, riots broke out among cotton laborers in the north of England, particularly in Lancashire. Troops were sent to Preston and Blackburn to help put down the rebellions. Among them was the South Wales Borderers Regiment under Colonel Wolseley. The South Wales Borderers were quartered at a place called Somsbury Hall. It's the ancestral seat of the Southworth family and has stood since 1325. For American listeners, that means that when George Washington was born, Somsbury Hall was already 400 years old. So there's the South Wales staying at Somsbury Hall. And one night, as Colonel Wolseley was about to go to bed, he heard the sound of a woman crying outside the window. You see, the room where the soldiers were quartered is called the Long Gallery, and it's a large sort of meeting room on the second floor of the hall. Colonel Wolseley had set up his bunk right next to one of the windows with a view of the lawns. So when he heard the sobbing coming from outside, he turned to look outside the window, and to his surprise, he saw a woman in a white dress walking across the lawns headed for the tree line of the forest. He quickly threw on his coat, grabbed his pistol, and ran down the stairs and out the door to the lawns. He followed the lady and saw her stop at a spot between a horse chestnut tree and a yew tree. He called out, "Miss, miss, are you all right?" But when she turned to face him, Colonel Wolseley, who had seen battle in India and the Crimea, who was a seasoned soldier, grabbed his gun, turned, and booked it as fast as he could back into the hall. Because when the lady in white turned her head to face the colonel, there was no face, only a dark, deep hole where her face should have been. The next evening, the colonel was dining with the owners of the hall, the Harrison family, and he told them his unsettling tale. The Harrisons responded, "Oh, I see you've met the White Lady," as if what had happened to him was completely normal, as if the White Lady were a frequent visitor. Traditionally, Christmas is a time to sit around the fire and tell ghost stories, and in that spirit, I'm going to tell you mine. I'm going to tell it to you the way I would tell it to somebody on a Christmas Eve, sitting by the tree. I'm Dory Peacock, and this is the Ghost Box. So I didn't know anything about the White Lady. I didn't know anything about Somsbury Hall. I had just flown into Manchester and I was visiting some small towns in the north of England. And Somsbury came up on a Google search as a historical location to check out. And so I plugged it into my GPS and drove my rental car out to see it. And it's gorgeous. It's very medieval looking. It's not a castle like you'd think of when you think of a medieval laird's manor, but it's a large, really beautifully built house. It has those sort of dark beams on the outside with the whitewash in between, like you think of when you think of the English countryside. It has those kind of medieval looking, I don't know how to describe them, kind of a fleur-de-lis design, but before fleur-de-lis were popular. And on the inside, it's very medieval looking. It has what used to be the family's private chapel, and then it has the great hall, which looks the way I always imagined mead halls in Norse legends would look. It has tall vaulted ceilings with wooden beams, a big iron chandelier, huge fireplace, and deer heads high up on the walls, with also stained glass windows all on one side. It's very Game of Thrones, very beautiful. And throughout the house, there's also kind of hallmarks of how it's changed over the years. So there's all the medieval stuff, and then there's also a big depiction of Henry VIII above one door frame that was added much later. Or there's sort of a fireplace mantelpiece that was added in the 1700s, or a portrait of whoever owned the hall during the 1800s. And the hall itself has had a huge, long history. It was the ancestral home of the Southworth family, like I mentioned, and they lived there from the 1300s down to the 1600s or 1700s when their family line died out. And after that, it became first it was an inn, it was a factory, it was used a few times to house soldiers, and at one point in the 19th century, it became a boarding school. In the 20th century, it was almost torn down to build condos, and then a group of local businessmen kind of banded together. They formed the Somsbury Hall Trust, and it's now still privately owned, I think, and it's kind of been preserved as a historical site, but also as an event center and a bed and breakfast. I honestly wish I would have stayed there, because it was very cool, very pretty, lots of history. One of the coolest things I saw while I was there is what they call a priest hole. After England became Protestant, during the rule of Henry VIII, it was actually illegal to be Catholic, so these old Catholic noble families would have a priest that lived with them and hid with them, that would do mass for them and christenings and stuff in private, and then if the soldiers ever came around to see if they had a priest, they had secret compartments built into their houses where the priest could hide. So I'm meandering around, looking at all this stuff on the main floor, and I find a staircase by the entrance hall. And above the staircase is a plaque that says, "History, Antiques, Witches, and Ghosts, this way," with an arrow pointing up the stairs. And I think, yes, everything I came to England for. And I go up the stairs, and honestly, I was disappointed. The antiques were not that impressive. They were in a little gallery above what used to be the chapel. And yeah, nothing too cool or ancient or impressive there. So I turn and I go through what's called the Long Gallery. It's a big kind of assembly room on the second floor. And again, very medieval, with the vaulted ceilings, huge fireplace, steel chandelier, and a gorgeous view through diamond-paned windows at the lawns outside, which, even though it was October, were very green. I looked around there, took a few pictures of the architecture, and again I see a plaque that says, "Ghosts and Witches This Way," pointing through a door at the other end of the Long Gallery. So I go through the door, and again, it's kind of disappointing. The only thing I found that was reminiscent of a ghost or a witch were two plaques on the walls that said, like, "Oh, a white lady is seen here. It's a ghost." And at some point in the 1600s, some witches were tried near this area. One of them was a person that lived here, and like, the witches weren't even burned. It was very unimpressive. Like, they were all acquitted. It was fine. So I settled for just looking at the architecture. The room where those plaques were was a replica of a school room from when it had been a boarding school. That was neat. It had a little chamber off to the side where if you went up a set of stairs, you'd be in this little room that was supposed to have belonged to the priest. And a Catholic priest was actually murdered in that room by one of the king's soldiers in the days of Henry VIII. It was really cool. It was amazing to be so tangibly in a place with so much history. And I kept waiting for the feeling to come, you know? I kept waiting to think, like, to feel the presence of generations past. And I kinda didn't. The most I could say was, like, "It's really cool. It's really beautiful. And it's really cool." Even, you know, standing in a place where a guy supposedly was murdered, I was just like, wow, a lot of stuff's happened here, neat. So I leave the priest's room, and there's a sign in the schoolroom that says, "World War I exhibit this way," pointing through the next door on the other side of the room from where I came in. And I'm like, I want to see a World War I exhibit. So I go through that door, and immediately it feels different. it kind of feels like this feeling I used to get in my grandma's basement when I was little. So I do this a lot, and when I talk to people, they talk to me about feeling like they're being watched, or feeling like the energy in a room changes. And that has never really made sense to me. I'm not a very sensitive person. I've said that before. I don't feel like I have the shining or whatever it is. And even that idea of feeling like you're being watched doesn't really resonate with me, because I've had living people stare at me very blatantly for a few minutes before I realized I was being watched. But I think what they're actually describing, or what they may be describing, is a feeling I would get in my grandma's basement when I was little. And it's a hard feeling to describe. I think the best I can characterize it is, it's the feeling you get right before fight or flight kicks in. And it's a feeling I've only ever had in dark places. Places that were dark or hard to navigate, or big. That was the problem with my grandma's basement, is that it was big, but it was dark. It didn't have very good windows. It had one window in the main room, and the rest of it was open. And the light switches were so badly placed. The light switches weren't where you thought they would be, so you would have to, before you could even turn on the light, you'd have to walk several feet into pure dark with nothing to hold on to and nothing around you. And you got this deep, primal sense that you were absolutely not safe. That's the best way I can describe that feeling. It's that feeling that when you go into a basement when you're little and then it's time to head out and the dark is behind you, it's that feeling that motivates you to run as fast as you can up the stairs, you know, in case of werewolves. And you just feel like at any minute something or someone could reach out and grab you. And it's not a feeling I get very often. It's not a feeling I've really had since I was, like, young. Suffice to say, it's not a feeling I've had in a long, long time. But I stepped into that room in Somsbury Hall and immediately had that feeling. I was, like, antsy. I felt like I wanted to bolt. And like I was not safe and something was gonna grab me. And the weird part about that is, this room at Somsbury was not dark. It didn't have lots of dark corners. It wasn't pitch black and wide open like all the other places I'd had that feeling. It was, in fact, very brightly lit. It had no dark corners. Everything in the room could be very clearly seen. And it wasn't even very spooky in terms of how it was decorated or what was in there. It was actually just decorated like a 1930s bedroom. It kind of looked like all the 20th century crap they had lying around, they had kind of arranged in this room to look like a bedroom. Like, it had a record player and it had this horrible red carpet that hasn't been cool since like the 70s. And all these little tchotchkes, like there was a porcelain horse, a Clydesdale, a ceramic Clydesdale. There was a porcelain Cupid doll for some reason. And then like various black and white photos, stuff I had seen a lot, nothing like even ancient or scary. Yeah, it was just like some kind of kitschy crap that you'd see laying around your great aunt's house or your grandma's house or whatever. And for some reason, it gave me that terrible, dark basement fight or flight feeling that I hadn't had since I was really young. And in spite of that feeling, I felt kind of compelled to stick around because it was so weird for me to have this feeling in a room that was not scary. And I kept looking around to see, like, what in this room could be making me feel this way? Was somebody behind me? Was somebody hiding? Was there some kind of weird object that I was, like, seeing in my periphery? But no, there was nothing. Like, I guess black and white photos could be a little creepy, but they've never been scary to me, so that, yeah, nothing in the room could explain why I would feel so threatened and so unsafe. So I really didn't have a choice but to brush it off and keep walking, and I walked through this bedroom. There was a door on the other side, and through that door I found the World War I exhibit. And I spent the rest of the day just kind of hanging around. Lovely day. Got a waffle. They had a wafflery there. Walked around the banks of a little stream. Went and saw the apiary. Everything was fine. But the rest of the trip, I kept thinking, why did I feel like that in that one room? It was so weird because I went so many other places on that trip. I had been to the John Rylands Library in Manchester. I had been, I went up to Blackpool. I went to Liverpool. I was in some of the most haunted, dark, scary parts of Liverpool. And I never felt as scared in any of those places as I had in that weird, kitschy little bedroom at Somsbury. So that experience kind of stuck out in my mind, and a year later, I was asked to do a Halloween presentation for my old high school. They wanted someone to come and tell a ghost story, and I thought, oh, I should go look up the ghost stories from Somsbury Hall, because I hadn't really paid attention. I had read something in the plaque about a white lady, and I didn't really know what that story was. And I go to look up that story. And I found that story about the colonel in the 1870s. And I found that these sightings of the white lady were so frequent that the Blackburn police, the local village, the local police, had a file just for white lady stories. Because she wasn't just seen on the grounds of the hall. She would be seen by people on the highway that goes right past it. So people on this highway would drive past and see somebody on the side of the road they thought was hitchhiking and call the police, and then when they look back, there's nobody there. They've even had people driving on that road think that they've hit somebody, and when they stop and pull over, they've already dialed 911, and they look, and nothing is there. So this is an often seen apparition. And this is one of those apparitions that has a very specific story. It's a tragic love story. It goes like this. The Southworth family, who lived at Somsbury Hall, they had a daughter called Dorothea. And she was walking in the woods one day outside her father's estate, and she met a young man in the woods. And they got to talking, and they became enamored with each other. And they began to meet in the woods often, and they developed this kind of secret courtship with each other. And they fell very deeply in love. And one day, Dorothea Southworth, she went to talk to her father, and she asked if she could have his permission to marry this young man. And her father asked, what's this young man's name? And she responded, it's young de Houghton, the heir to Houghton Tower, another nearby estate. And when her father heard the name de Houghton, he refused to give his consent for Dorothea to marry him, and furthermore said, if you go near that boy again, I will send you away to a convent in southern France. See, the Southworths, as I said earlier, were Catholic. And the Houghtons had converted to Protestantism. So if they were to marry, not only is there a political and a religious rivalry there, but there's, you know, stakes of heaven and hell. What she didn't know was that he then went to her brothers and said, if you find that boy sniffing around here, if you find out that she's still seeing that Tehotan boy, I want you to do what needs to be done. If anything, their family's disapproval of their love makes these two lovers, you know, even more eager to meet each other. And they meet often in the woods, either near Somsbury Hall or near Houghton Tower, and they develop a plan to elope together. And on the appointed night, they meet again, and young Tehotan brings with him a huge, huge bejeweled ring. And on the inside, he's had it engraved with her married name. And he is down on one knee, goes to give her the ring, begs her to be his wife, and before she can even say yes, before she can even put the ring on her finger, her two brothers step out of the shadows with knives drawn and murder her lover before her very eyes. They murder him, they drag her back home, and the next day she's sent to a convent in southern France. And the legend goes that after she got to France, when she got to the convent, she refused to eat and she refused to sleep until she died, they say, of a broken heart. Probably actually starvation, but brought on by a broken heart. And for hundreds of years, Dorothea's ghost is seen walking from the house itself across the lawns into the woods to this spot where she was seen by the colonel between the horse chestnut tree and the yew tree. And in the 1920s, they start this, the Somsbury Hall Trust starts this renovation project of the hall. And part of that is to widen the road leading to the hall for cars to be able to drive on it. And that also means putting in a drainage system. And while they're digging trenches to put in the drainage system and to widen the road, they wind up digging between the horse chestnut tree and the yew tree. And the workers, as they're digging, unearth a skeletonized human foot. And they immediately call the police. They're pretty sure this is a homicide. And when the police come, they unearth the body, they dig some more, and they find an entire skeleton. And in some accounts, I've read that they found several bodies. But one of them, on its skeletal hand, still wore a huge bejeweled ring, and on the inside of it was the inscription, Dorothea Tehotan. After hundreds of years, they found the body of Dorothea's murdered lover buried in a spot between the horse chestnut tree and the yew tree. And they finally knew why she made this exodus from Somsbury Hall to this spot in the forest where her lover was buried. Okay, so now we come to the part of the podcast where I fact-check myself before I fact-wreck myself. This is a hard story to prove. It's hard to fact-check. It's unclear when it would have happened. Different accounts give different dates for this love affair. There were several Dorothea de Southworths, but we can't be sure which one was the White Lady. I wasn't able to find one who had died singly or was purported to have died in France, but it's also possible it's so long ago, who knows how good those records are. It's also interesting that none of the accounts ever give the first name of the Tehotan boy. They just call him Young Tehotan. I didn't find a first name for him in any written accounts. And it's kind of hard to nail down what time period this would have to have been. It would have to have been a time when there were both Protestant and Catholic noble families. Some accounts I read put this in the 1420s, which is not right. I think it's more likely it would have happened in the days of Henry VIII, or possibly the reign of Queen Mary. But again, it's hard to know. But in any event, whatever the truth of Dorothea Southworth was, whoever those bodies were that they found when they did the restoration project in the early 20th century, people have seen something. And they continue to see things. And as I'm looking all these things up, and as I'm looking for more information about this ghost story, I find a YouTube video where a sort of paranormal storyteller named Simon Entwistle is telling this same story. And in the video, he's going to the different locations around the hall. And I hear him in the video say, "Our story begins here, in what's known as Lady Dorothea's bedchamber." And I look up at the video, and he's standing in that weird little bedroom where I felt that weird feeling. It's exactly the same room. Everything. I can see the horrible red carpet. The horse. The porcelain Clydesdale is behind him. The porcelain Cupid doll is right there. In Lady Dorothea's bedchamber. I don't know. I'm not saying I met a ghost. What I am saying is that old places can be, in a way, kind of magical. And that whether they're haunted by ghosts or memories or a mood, there's something weird. I have not had that feeling a long time before and have not felt it since. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Ghost Box, where I talked about my sort of paranormal experience. As always, The Ghost Box is written and hosted and all the stuff by me, Dory Peacock, with help from our four-legged production assistant, George Moosington Adams, who is glaring at me quite judgmentally. If you have a story you'd like to share with us, please email us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com, or you can slide into our DMs on Twitter or Instagram at theghostboxpod. You can also call our paranormal hotline at 801-410-4315. That's 801-410-4315. If you do call, be sure to leave us a message. And if we think it's right for the show, we will get back to you as long as you leave an email and phone number for us to contact you. If you like this episode, please rate and review on iTunes. It helps people find the show. And if you didn't like this episode, what are you doing, man? There's like so many other things you could be doing. Why are you listening to something you don't like, man? Just, you listen to Serial? Serial's good. Go, you know what? Go check out Serial. It's great. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dory Peacock. Stay spooky, everybody. Nope. Oh, also, nope. The cat is, I don't know why he's trying to bite me. Okay, here we go.